Welcome to the Gautrain Talks podcast station, the place to be for all matters related to the Gautrain and how it came to be South Africa's first ever high-speed commuter rail system. In studio today, Olaas van Sail, the former project coordinator on the Gautrain project between 2000 and 2016 and a former CEO of the BKS Group and a former MD of Kutele Projects. Olaas, welcome. Let's start with your role and your involvement in the Gautrain project. In what shape and form was it?
Thank you. It's nice to be here. I was the project coordinator, basically leading and coordinating the team of consultants appointed by the provincial government to support the provincial government.
Olaas, let's look at the issue of leadership. You were obviously one of the leaders on the project as the project coordinator between the year 2000 and the year 2016. What do you believe the lessons learned about leadership you took out from being involved in the senior position on the project?
Well, of course, I think the normal leadership requirements are there. Look after your staff, respect your staff, communicate with them, make sure that they are all up to date with exactly what's going on in the project, especially a big project like this. A person is working on a viaduct somewhere near Pretoria, but he's part of the Gautrain project. He wants to know how's it going with the tunneling, the production of the trains and so on. You want to make them proud of the project as a whole. So communication is critically important also with your own staff. But coming to the more technical aspects of leadership, I think people must understand exactly right from the beginning who is entitled to make what decisions. Because you cannot have a project like this where decisions are not taken. A big project like this, time is money, and you're going to lose a lot of money if you don't take the decisions that you have to take. And this is right from the politicians, because certain decisions are on their level. Some is with the project leader, Mr. Jack van der Merwe, and then there was a whole delegation of powers also to the PST, the provincial support team, and we knew exactly what decisions we could take. And this is also one of the reasons why it was critically important to have a person like Jack van der Merwe as the project leader of the whole project, because he was a government official with many years' experience in major roads projects and other construction projects. He knew exactly what the National Treasury's rules are with regard to things. He knew exactly when to go to the politicians, and he had the trust of the politicians. So I would think that this is one of the successes of our project, but also one of the lessons learned is to make sure that there is 100% clarity on who makes what decisions on what level and when.
Now, you've touched on the issue of operations earlier, but if you look back now at how the operations process played out, what are the lessons for you in terms of what you learned from the operations process, and perhaps how would you do things differently should you do it again?
The one aspect is a very technical aspect, and this is that the operator is not an equity partner of the concessionaire. And the reason for this was that the operator was basically the operator of the Paris metro system, RATP Development, and at that stage, their government, which is the owner of that company, didn't want them to take a risk. We had to give them special, or the Bombela Consortium, special approval that it's okay, the operator can be part of their team without taking up equity. Now, this, it still works quite well, But you can see on certain very fundamental things that if you are not an equity owner in the company, you deal with it. They become a service provider. And the responsibility lies with the concessionaire. So now you've got to take the concessionaire on and say, but this is what the concession agreement says with regard to the operations. And he's got to talk to his service provider instead of an equity partner in the Bombela Consortium.
Which is a very different discussion, I would imagine.
Yes.
It's about having skin in the game and whether you have a vested interest or not.
Exactly. So I would think this is one of the more fundamental things, but it was a very particular reason why it happened in this way. And we were very happy to have, because they've got excellent experience. I think anybody that's been on the Paris Underground would know that it's a very well-run system, and we've had that experience now transferred to South Africa and into the Gautrain system. When we got to the changeover from the development phase to the operational phase, we still had the snag list. The snag list, we had over 50,000 snags identified. And you've got 6 months or so after you finished with the development phase, the physical work, to determine the snag list. And then you've got a year to complete that snags. Now, many of those snags are paintwork that's not done, or a leakage in a station, water damp or whatever, or tiles which have not been laid 100% or so on. But there are more fundamental snags also. Now, snag number one was the tunnel leakage or the water leakage in the tunnel. And that's a story on its own, because it had all sorts of repercussions with disputes and arbitrations and things like that. But the other snags, they were all supposed to be fixed within a year. But because the water leakage became a dispute and arbitration and couldn't be resolved because that was legally resolved, the snag list, I would say 99% of it was done within the year as specified. But the 50 most difficult snags were dragged on with, because there was no pressure. And you can ask yourself, shouldn't we have allowed in the concession agreement for a situation like this? But you see, the pressure on the concessionaire to finish the snag list is they provide bonds, a performance bond and a retention bond. And that's many, many millions of rands and even billions of rands, which they've got to put down in a bank, provide as a guarantee for the project if they would pull out or for whatever other reason. Yes. They can't get their bonds back until the snags have been resolved. And normally in a construction project, you would say, well, that's the pressure on them. Why must I build in any other penalties? In our case, because they couldn't get the bonds back, couldn't complete the snag list because of the water leakage in the tunnel, and that hasn't been resolved. There was no pressure on them to finish off the other items. But there were one or two of those which I felt in the end, it took us about 3 years to resolve those items. And maybe it was good that we had more time, because they were difficult issues also on our side, and a lot of work had to go into them. Now the going over to the operations phase, you see, when you establish your snag list, the question is it a maintenance issue? Is it a deficiency? Something done wrong? Because remember, during the project, the operations phase, there are lots of things that needs attention under maintenance. So I sat in on the operations team and at the operations meetings together with the Bombela CJV, the civil joint venture people, who were responsible only for the development phase, because we had to make sure, and that was only for a year or two, that some of the issues which are being discussed there are in fact legacy development phase and not operational phase issues. But again, and just to come back to the concession agreement, in our case, concession agreement was finally negotiated 2005-2006 for a concession period of 20 years. The concession agreement has to determine exactly what can possibly happen in this project and must make provision for it. And not only the development phase, but also the operational phase. And that runs for a 20-year period. So you can imagine if you must think ahead 15, 20 years, also on the operations side, what can go wrong? What if? And what must you do then? Who's responsible? What are the solutions? And that must all go into the CA. And therefore, you will appreciate that yes, as you go on with the project, there are so many externalities and so on in a project like this, where which is not necessarily covered in the CA, and where new arrangements have to be made. So there are a lot of challenges for the operational phase.
Which actually leads quite nicely into dispute management, because there's no doubt on a project of this scale, time period, etc., that disputes obviously would arise in the various contracts and the various management teams. What were the lessons learned for you in terms of dispute management and resolution, and how did you overcome those challenges?
Well, let me first of all say when we advanced in the project and the development phase and the disputes and the claims started coming in, the politicians were, not being a fay with construction projects generally, said, what's going on? You know, and I drew up a memorandum for them and that was just after the Soccer World Cup. And I showed that for Soccer World Cup stadiums, the King Shaka Airport in Durban, the Gauteng Freeway Scheme, there's not one of these fairly recent contracts at that stage where there were no claims and disputes. It was quite normal. In fact, I sat
It's almost impossible, I would imagine, to have a completely seamless project on this size and scale.
Yeah. Well, I was in a for a big international project in Belgium. One day we were partnering with the international company, and they were talking about the tender they were submitting, and the contractor was, it was one of these things where the consulting engineers and the contractors were together, and the argument was, is our tender price competitive enough? And this was one of the big, big projects in the world at that stage. And the contractor said, yes, it's competitive, but it's not from our side very good, but we'll make it up with claims and disputes. So some of them even plan it from the beginning. Now, in 90% of the projects, these claims and disputes are settled in the end of the day. And in our case, it was fortunately also settled. We had some big arbitrations with fairly big amounts, and they went through right up to the point where a judgment was given by the judges. So by the time we made a settlement was after some of the arbitrations were completed, but the funds not necessarily paid from which side? Because remember, the disputes don't only come from the concessionaire side, they were also disputes from our side. For example, on the tunnel leakage and so on, which had huge financial implications for them. And I think the settlement in the end, in our case, was very reasonable and even lower percentage-wise than many of the other contracts I've just referred to. When we come to disputes, I think I have to mention that we provided for a dispute Resolution Board, a DRB, and a whole process in the CA. And this maybe was one of the lessons we learned, that didn't work. We had one major dispute done through the DRB, and the parties weren't happy at the end, and we had to go to arbitration. Arbitration is a exercise outside of the project. It's the Arbitration Foundation of South Africa. They make use of judges, in many instances retired judges, and even advocates and so on, to sit on the bench and rule on the particular thing. So it's a very proper system which is run. But you can even be unhappy with arbitration, and then you can say, now I'm going to the normal legal court system. And there were one or two stages in our project where this was also considered.
Well, so I want to move on to something slightly different now. What do you think some of the lessons learnt in terms of how you overcame the rapid institutional knowledge walkout at a various stage in the project? Because obviously things come to an end, and yeah, certain expertise and knowledge leaves the project.
Yeah.
What did you learn from a lesson point of view, and how did you deal with that issue?
Well, I think first of all, to make sure that you retain the experience and the knowledge. Of course, Gautrain is a very unique project. Yes, we've planned extensions to the Gautrain, but the likelihood of getting another Gautrain in South Africa exactly like Gautrain is not very likely. But we will get other projects, and even projects like the Eskom power stations, the Lesotho Highland scheme, water scheme, and projects like that. We had some of those people coming to us and asking us, what did you do here, what did you do there, and so on. So yes, we've developed experience and knowledge which should somehow be retained, because at the end of the day, government paid for it, and you wouldn't like that to just go down the drain at the end of the day. And it's not easy how you retain it.
Because you're also a victim of your own success. If you develop this knowledge and this experience,
yes,
it's going to be in demand in the marketplace.
Oh, yes. But, you know, you've mentioned that I've been project coordinator for 16 years, and then I retired. So, I mean, the availability, if you've retired, is not all that good. So, but yes, there were also younger people than I that worked on it, and you want that knowledge also to be generally available, especially if government paid for it. Now, we've recognized that right from the beginning, and we've established certain processes. We've appointed, by the time we got to the end of the development period, the Gautrain Management Agency were established. They, of course, as mentioned already, were responsible for the operational phase and the rest of the project. But we appointed some of their staff to run in parallel with our staff to have the experience on the ground with the actual things. Then we wrote up some of the experiences in reports, and yes, we've reported on the whole process. As I've mentioned to you, I've actually been called back to make sure that the procurement process, all the details and checks and balances and so on, have been properly documented. Now, we've tried to do the same with the development process, and we've given names and telephone numbers and so on if those people are still available and they haven't retired or passed away or immigrated or whatever, where they can be contacted. But then we've the GMA appointed staff to be responsible for case studies and even things like this podcast we're doing. And I personally think it's a big success story, the way that those case studies have been documented and made available, because we have, apart from people in other projects, and I've mentioned power stations and so on. We have students coming to the GMA on a continuous basis, doing projects and wanting to know what we did here and there and there. And I really do think that the retention of knowledge and experience has been done very well in the case of Gautrain.
Lastly, Olas, if you were to be involved in a project of a similar nature, what would you do differently or change in terms of structure and approach, looking back now on your nearly 20 years involved with the Gautrain project?
Yeah. I would certainly go for a PPP project, and this is fundamental. I mean, there is the other podcast available on the procurement project, but you are forced to go through certain processes, which you don't normally have in a big project like this. Yes, a proper team to support the project from government side, proper bidders and concessionaires. I would largely, the big elements of the project, I would certainly do again. I'm very happy that I think, and you can, yeah, they say in sport, look at the scoreboard, but look at the project and the outcome of it, and it's a successful project. It is supported by the people. It runs completely full at peak periods. Extensions are planned and so on. So yes, when you come to smaller things, and I've mentioned certain things to you, there are many other smaller things, yes, where you would certainly make adjustments. But the major aspects, I would certainly do the same all over again.
The proof is in the pudding.
Exactly.
Olas, thanks for your time. We value your input. You've been listening to Olas van Sail, former project coordinator on the Gautrain project. He's been providing us with insight into the lessons learned from the Gautrain project, covering issues such as the development phase, leadership, contract management, dispute management, and institutional knowledge. To listen to this and other interviews about the Gautrain, please tune into our podcast at Gautrain Talk Station. You can also access further material on our website. That's www.gautrain.co.za, or follow us on Twitter.